Welcome to the Excellent Taste Podcast with Matt and Garrett.
My name is Willie Simpson.
Today, Willie, we're finishing off, if you can believe it, Batman the Animated Series, the final two episodes of Season 3, Episodes 23 and 24, Beware the Creeper and Mad Love. Can you believe it?
No.
Well, you better believe it. Before we talk about that and a few other things, please dispense with the plugs.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook or Reddit group so you can interact with us and the rest of the audience. If you like the show and you want to support us, you could always go to our Buy Me a Coffee page, links included in the description, where you could make a voluntary donation. Again, no pressure there. And last but not least, if you enjoyed the show, please leave a nice 5-star review on iTunes. Again, we appreciate everyone who does just that. Sonia, there's way too much to talk about this episode.
Yes, these two episodes, I mean, it's the conclusion of another incredible series.
Let's go through the series we've done.
All right.
X-Men, Spider-Man, X-Men Evolution, Wolverine and the X-Men, now Batman.
Silver Surfer, in a way.
Yeah, right. We did one episode of Silver Surfer. We talked about all the episodes. Does that count? Who knows? And in 2 weeks, we will be starting X-Men 97.
Well, like a week and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So currently we release on Mondays.
Yes.
Because we record over the weekend.
Yeah.
We're going to try to watch the episodes of X-Men 97 as they come out on Wednesday nights.
Right.
And we'll try to record and get it out there like as soon as we can, probably the next morning.
Yeah, definitely. We got to. What got other to. Choice do we have?
Yeah. I mean, what are we doing here otherwise?
Yeah, so that'll be a slight change in schedule for the, you know, the, I guess, 9 weeks the show's on because two episodes are in week one.
Right.
So for 9 weeks, it'll be a Thursday morning show. But then, you know, we'll see what happens after that and what direction we swerve. But that's a discussion for another day. Sonia, yeah, before we talk about the final two episodes of Batman, oh my God, we did go to the movies this weekend and we saw Dune Part 2.
Yeah, well, actually, the predecessor to that was we knew we were going to see Dune Part 2. We saw Wonka was up on Max or wherever.
Right,
on
yeah.
TV. We said, let's do a double dose of Timothy Chalamet. Why not?
Double dip on Timmy Chalamet.
Timothée? How do you say his
Timothée
name?
Chalamet.
Is that correct?
No. I don't know.
Well,
what do you think of Wonka?
I thought I was going to hate it. It was more enjoyable than I expected.
Same.
Did I ever tell you that in second grade, we did a class play of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Yeah.
And I was Willy Wonka.
It was a weird foretelling of who you would end up with one day in life. A mad prediction of love for that's a poor tie-in to this Harley Quinn origin episode we'll get to later.
I had a purple top hat with rhinestones on it.
Wow.
Yep.
Was it based off the book or based off the the first movie from the 70s?
Oh, I don't know. Did they differ that much? I'm not really sure.
Well,
I don't remember anymore.
Differ a little bit.
I don't remember.
Yeah. What do you think of Wonka, Sonia?
Well, what do you think of
Wonka? I don't want to interrogate you too much on your second grade play of Willy Wonka.
It's been a long time. I don't really remember that well.
I liked it too. I thought it was good. I mean, it's like, it's interesting because it's definitely a prequel to the classic one from the 70s versus the Johnny Depp one from the 2000s. And they used music from the 70s one as well, the Imagination song.
Oh, yeah. All the other songs were not from
the Oompa Loompa song.
Yeah, but like it was pretty much a musical. There were like several songs in there that were original, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure, yeah. But
also,
I
am a Grinch and I hate musicals.
Wait till we start talking about Dune 2. Oh my God.
Yeah.
We'll see who the bigger Grinch is. It was a silly, charming movie. It was a prequel to the 70s one. It reminded me of Superman Returns, weirdly, because that's like the unofficial sequel to Superman 2, forgetting the actual sequels that happened, the Christopher Reeve Superman 3 and 4. So it had like a little bit of that going on. You know, tons of stars in there.
Unexpected stars too.
Yeah.
It was more delightful than I expected. I fully thought it was going to be like cringe, corny, and I would like extremely hate it.
It was made with a fair modicum of love, I would say, for the source material.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like how effective it was, how necessary was the story. Like it was okay. It was effectiveness. It was okay. It was like charming enough. I'm sure kids probably would enjoy it. How like needed was this tale, the prequel of Willy Wonka? I would say like unneeded.
Unneeded, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's another one of these like IP things where it's a two-part thing. It's like, I know it's the studios are like, this is a recognizable IP. Let's do another version of it because mm-hmm. people know about it and they're interested in it
mm-hmm.
versus like, how much do they feel they need to like retell the story instead of just showing kids the original movie? Like, are we at the point where original kids would watch that Willy Wonka movie from the 70s, and just say, it's too old, it's boring, I'm not going to watch it.
You know, I think there's a fair chance because I remember when I watched it, it was after second grade, I'll say.
Okay.
But like as like an older elementary school kid maybe, I thought that like it just wasn't that shiny compared to what I was used to. Like the sets and costumes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Were just of like a different style I remember thinking like, oh, this doesn't look that nice, you know.
I loved it as a kid.
Really?
I am a year older than you, so
perhaps you were more mature.
I was just at the cutoff point of finding it acceptable as entertainment. I love it to this day. I would watch that tomorrow.
I like it now, yeah. Because like Gene Wilder is great in it. He's totally unhinged in like a good way for the movie.
Yeah.
But I remember as a kid thinking it was like kind of boring.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, yeah, now you don't have to love all these childhood classics.
I did love Roald Dahl books as a kid.
I was obsessed with Roald Dahl books, and the Willy Wonka movie was a real home run for me.
They're also, like,
I don't love all the adaptations of his movies, though. I was not, like, I remember loving James and the Giant Peach as a book.
Yeah, me too.
And then as the movie was a big like, letdown. Now I don't even remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, like, I liked the book The Witches, but the movie, like, freaked me out so bad. I remember thinking it was, like, a lot scarier than the book.
Right. Anyway, this is all to say we thought we would we need to see some Timothée Chalamet before we checked out Dune Part 2.
Right.
We probably talked about Dune Part 1 when it came out in COVID times on HBO. It was one of those, like, weird ones where they didn't want to put it in theaters. I think it did get into theaters, but mm-hmm. people could watch it for free at home. I was not a fan of Dune Part 1. I never read the Dune books. I know you have.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, so much of science fiction is, like, ripped off of Dune, especially Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And comic books, and a lot of comic books were influenced by Dune. I've also never seen the original 1984 Dune movie.
I actually haven't either. I'd be interested to go watch it and see how it compares.
I've seen it in pieces. Let me put it that way. I think I've seen parts of it. I remember watching it once or most of it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a Dune head. You're more of a Dune head than I.
I'm not even. I read the book like once when I was in college or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you read the book though.
I liked it a lot when I read it.
Yeah.
But that's where it ends. I never like reread it or mm-hmm. like there were also like, I don't know. There's like a bunch of like connected, like smaller
right.
novels. I think.
Right. So the story goes on.
The story goes on. I didn't get into all that.
All right,
so
I'll just cut to the chase. I thought Dune 2 was beautifully filmed. I thought it had an excellent script. I thought the actors were giving it their all, and it was beautifully performed. It is a beautiful movie. That all said, it was not for me. I was not happy watching Dune 2. I mean, just for me, it just comes down to the story. Like, I just don't. You know, like worm juice and telepathic babies and the war on Arrakis and riding the worms. I mean, I know that gets a lot of people off, and that's great. Like, and I think, like, if you go see Dune 2 and you like Dune 1 or you like the books or whatever, I think you're going to be thrilled with Dune Part 2. It is great. It is, like, truly, like, undeniably a great movie, a great science fiction movie. I think, like, you know, I see a lot of people that are sick of Marvel, like, trumpeting this as, like, this is what Hollywood should be doing with science fiction, you know, like a movie like this. And I get it. It just didn't connect with me, though, personally, even though I was able to recognize it as a great piece of art. What were your, like, overall thoughts?
I was really into it for like 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And I like there were a couple stopping points where I thought like, okay, now the movie can end and they'll like make another yeah. movie to tell us the rest of right. what happens. But it didn't end. It just really continued. And it was one of those movies where it's not like one big crescendo and then there's like some resolution to the conflict and whatever. It was like a bunch of like little crescendos mm-hmm. that kind of kept like the storyline kind of arcs like up and down like a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And it just gives you this feeling of like, when is this ride going to end? Like,
yeah.
That was my like.
I wasn't in suspense in a good way. I was kind of in suspense for wanting it to end.
Like, I know you hate when you see a movie runtime is more than an hour and a half. Yeah. Like, you're angry about it every single time. I've made peace with the fact that most modern movies are at least 2 hours long, and I don't mind that. Mm-hmm. But when they feel like they're a lot longer than 2 hours, then I mind it. You know, yeah. if it's like if it's telling a good story for all 2 hours, then cool. But
well, do you think it told a good story? I mean,
for the first like almost 2 hours, it did, and then it continued for another
yeah
while.
Right, after there's that. Like a big longer ending.
Yeah, but I also agree that it was like filmed beautifully, shot beautifully. I thought the characterization was very weird between the two main characters that fall in love.
Right.
You know,
Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah.
I don't think there was much heat there. I didn't, which is weird because in real life, she's in love with Tom Holland, who's a similar type of dude to Timothée Chalamet, which made me kind of chuckle, but I didn't feel like they had great chemistry.
Like when they start falling in love, like he starts falling in love with her
yeah.
and you like, you know, he's giving her the creepy eyes or whatever. And you're like, wait, are they going to kiss? Like, they seem like aliens. Do aliens kiss?
No, they refer to them as humans at one point.
I know
point.
They are humans. Just, like, everything about, like, their world and circumstances and behavior makes them seem like aliens, kind yeah. of. Which, like, isn't the point. Like, they're yeah. supposed to be. So I thought, like, the characterization was weird to me. That's all.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of on the same page. Just the romance didn't work. I didn't think that the heat from the actors was like where I wanted it to be. I liked what's his name? Austin Butler. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
The Elvis guy, who we're also enjoying in Masters of the Air, a show we're still watching.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed him. I mean, he was a great villain. And the guy.
Did you like that gladiator scene where they're like under the black sun and everything looks white?
Again, like this movie is fucking cool looking. Like yeah. there is no denying it. It is so well thought out. Every shot is really planned well. It is beautiful. The special effects are top notch. I didn't like this. I don't know why. Like it's you know, it's a brutal movie. The movie is like a brutal style of brutalism. And
I hated the soundtrack.
Yes, I thought it was silly, the soundtrack, because it's like all like that like orchestral jump scare stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just like too much. It was like punishing me. And again, it's like it's got like the movie to me is like elements of brutalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not in love with that style in general, yeah. like art, okay. you know, music, film. Like I'm not a brutalist.
Yeah.
My heart did lighten when Christopher Walken was revealed as the Emperor of the Universe. Because he was the funniest part. He doesn't do anything funny. He's giving it his all. And he is a great serious actor. You know, enormous, like, history of amazing performances and movies under his belt. But he also has a history of, like, total schlock and comedic performances, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know about Christopher Walken. Right. So it was just funny to see him. I remember reading this, like, touching interview he gave semi-recently where he's like, you know, I think I just got too old and they stopped calling.
Mm.
And, you know, it's really sad because I'm still willing to work. And I don't know if that interview reached Denis Villeneuve. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Villeneuve.
So he put him in the movie and great. Like, I was happy to see Christopher Walken there. He did a great job. Dave Bautista as, like, the secondary bad guy. I thought he had a good part.
Yeah, he had a good part. He played it well.
He played it really well. The bad guys were good. I liked the bad guys. They had a lot more interesting humanity in them, weirdly, for being so demonic and cruel.
Mm-hmm.
The good guys were just, I don't know, it was just like, just didn't like connect with me in a way that made me feel good about like wanting to save the world or something.
Mm-hmm.
So would you recommend people seeing Dune 2 is the question.
I think you have to, like, majorly be a fan of this, like, specific type of sci-fi to enjoy this. I don't think it's crazy that it, I mean,
it people love it. Like, a lot of my friends loved it and they thought I was crazy for not digging it.
Yeah, I mean, did they feel the same way about the first one?
I think they did. I think people really liked the first one, too.
I, like, wouldn't imagine that this would be...
I thought the first one was a snooze.
Like, a general appeal kind of movie. To me, these seem so, like, niche for people who are just, like, really into this genre or, have read, the material that came before or whatever, but...
I think this one's going to be a big hit. I mean, there's a lot of stars in it. It is beautifully made and well done. I think there's, a lot of prestige hype around it, too.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to do good business. It's already made, $100 million. Hmm. So I think if you like serious science fiction, another friend I had compared it to Game of Thrones, which is something I also don't like that much.
Yeah. I can see that. Like, the tone of it is kind of similar. I mean, this is one of those sci-fi movies that has people in these settings that are very, stark and minimalist. It's like a stone room stylized in some way. And there's no, evidence of humanity. There's no such thing as, food or a bathroom or, a leisure activity for them to do while they're waiting around until this one person
comes. Well, there's a lot of spiritualism in it.
There is a lot of spiritualism in it, but just, the day-to-day stuff that Marvel, goes out of its way to address comedically is, 100% non-existent in this world.
Yeah, I know.
And that's part of, the brutalist, starkness of it.
Yeah, and if you're into that, super serious, hard sci-fi... the character Roman from Party Down would love this movie.
Yeah.
Then great. I think you'll not be disappointed. I think it's a 10 out of 10 from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, it's just, I'm not gonna put a number on it, but it just was not an enjoyable experience.
I didn't love it. I don't really want to see it again, but if they made a third movie, I would absolutely see it.
Would you go to see it or would you just wait for it on video?
I don't know. Either one.
I think I would see it too, but I would just wait for it to come out on streaming or whatever. I know people say oh, you have to go see an IMAX and take it all in. That never, maybe I'm just being too stubborn about that, but that's never a selling point for me for going to see a movie. Mm-hmm. I remember the last IMAX movie I saw was Star Wars The Force Awakens when that came out. And I saw it in the original screen first. And then, we saw it in IMAX, me and another friend. And I was okay. It just didn't do it, it didn't add anything for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, I don't even know if Star Wars The Force Awakens was specifically filmed for IMAX or they just blew it up. I think Dune 2 was filmed for IMAX, so maybe it is truly way more transcendent to experience it in an IMAX theater. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, let's all know what you think of Dune Part 2. Again, truly a very awesome movie, but just bad vibes for me. I wasn't I didn't feel, let me put it this way, I didn't feel anything when he... spoiler, managed to ride the sandworm.
Oh.
I could tell he's going to figure it out. Maybe it's just Timothée Chalamet as the star. There's something goofy about him to me that it's just silly to take him seriously as the ultimate warrior of this hardened desert world. Mm. But maybe that's my own bias against Timothée Chalamet. I mean, who I actually like. I don't dislike him, but he didn't seem right for this role to me, perhaps.
Well...
Any further Timothée Chalamet commentary before we move on?
I don't know anything about him.
I just know he's from New York City and he painted Xbox controllers before he got famous. Did you know that about him?
What does that mean?
He was 14 and he had a little YouTube channel where he would show off Xbox controllers that he would custom paint and sell them online.
Oh, and was that a successful business for him?
No. Someone dug it up and found it. They had zero views, these videos he had made. And they revealed it to him. He's yeah, that was me.
Okay. I mean, it's not that shameful, really.
No, it's just funny. In a weird way, relatable. He was probably just a cool little nerdy New York teen. Who became an internet? He's the next Leonardo DiCaprio, right? The next heartthrob.
Is he?
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
Leonardo DiCaprio warned him never to do superhero movies.
This doesn't count.
I would not now because this is an arty prestige.
It's outside of the franchise. I mean, it comes down to the same thing, right?
Yeah.
They took some sci-fi books and movieized it. So.
And it already was a movie. It's a remake too.
Yeah.
It's some IP. It's a little higher brow. Than your typical Marvel or Star Wars or even Star Trek. But yeah, interesting. I mean, it's definitely an interesting movie. So even though we're repeating ourselves. go see Dune 2 and let us know what you think. All right, Sonia, we have two final episodes of Batman here. And there are two, essentially two Joker origin-esque episodes.
Mm-hmm. Joker, Harley Quinn.
Right. Origin episodes. Adjacent episodes, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is called Beware the Creeper. And it's, I knew nothing about the Creeper. I knew about Jack Ryder. I knew him from the Arkham video games. He's a character that Batman meets.
Mm.
I don't think he doesn't become the Creeper in any of those video games.
Okay.
But I had no idea about the Creeper. I didn't know he was created by Steve Ditko in the 60s, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So this is like a totally insane new character added late into the Batman continuity here. I mean, one of the interesting trivia notes we had was that they wanted to do the Creeper like from season one. And they just never found time or...
Oh, they just like didn't get around to it?
Yeah. And they like finally like did it in the second to last episode, essentially.
Okay. I mean, it's... the look of this character is crazy. Like in the 60s comic... His skin is like bright yellow.
Right.
He is wearing like underpants that are like green and black striped. And he has like a fur. He calls it a boa in this episode, but it's not really a boa. It's like a cape, but like.
It's like a wig. I thought it was a wig cape.
Wig that he wears as a cape.
It's like a full body length wig that he wears.
Bright red hair.
Yeah.
So like the design is like taken from the 60s comic for sure and just like updated a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. He looks kind of crazy. He acts kind of crazy.
This is a very strange episode.
Yeah.
Not a great one. There's interesting things that happen in it for sure.
Right. Okay. So basically, like, Jack Ryder is this like TV anchor or like newscaster, and he's doing an expose about the Joker, I guess, or like a deep dive into the Joker. And so he goes
Geraldo-esque kind of news reporting.
Right. He goes to the factory or whatever where the acid vats are.
The Ace Chemical Plant.
Right. Ace Chemical Plant that Joker fell into and that turned him into the Joker. And he's reporting live from there. And Bruce Wayne is watching so seriously. He has like his fingers tented as he's watching because he needs like every scrap of little info that he can get on the Joker, his arch nemesis.
Presumably Batman knows more about the Joker than Jack Ryder does.
Yeah, for sure. But he's, like, watching the live footage.
It is I mean, Robin or Tim Drake's there, and he's like, why are you watching this? You know, you're obsessed with this.
Yeah.
And Batman is very...
He just, like, shoos him away.
Yeah, he's so intent on... Do you think Bruce Wayne's watching so intently because he thinks the Joker's going to cause some mischief at this thing?
No, I think he's just trying to, like, gather as much info as possible.
I disagree with you there. I just think that Batman would know more than Jack Ryder does about the Joker.
Okay.
But whatever. I mean, like, it is a little odd, as Tim Drake says, that he's, you know, Batman is paying attention so closely, at least in my point of view.
All right. Well, anyway, on the broadcast, the Joker does show up, like, on a catwalk behind Jack Ryder, and Batman, like, springs to action and runs over there. So you think that he was watching knowing that the Joker was going to do that?
I don't know. Yeah, that was my impression.
Not what I thought at all.
That's fair, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You just thought he was just, like, thought he had, like, Jack Ryder had uncovered something about the Joker that...
Or just, like, maybe he was looking for extra clues in the Ace Chemical Plant and he hadn't, like, gotten down there himself or something.
I mean, he was at the Ace Chemical Plant when Joker was transformed.
I know. I think it's just that he's so obsessed that he can't, like, let it go when there's anything that mentions anything related to the mm-hmm. Joker. I think they were just driving home the point, like, he's there.
That's a good interpretation of it. I think that's probably a more accurate way than how I saw it, but... I just don't think it was like he's gathering intel, because as we see in the next episode, Mad Love, Batman seems to know a lot about Joker, psychology.
He knows a lot about him.
All right, whatever.
He's obsessed, that's all.
Yeah.
Okay, so he goes down to the chemical plant because he knows like something bad is going to happen if Joker's back there. Joker is throwing like laughing gas bombs down at the crew, so they're all like incapacitated. He throws one at Jack Ryder himself.
They're chickens.
Right.
They're plucked chickens that... explode into laughing gas. I hate that laughing gas. That is a really terrifying weapon.
Yeah, that is horrible.
Yeah.
And he says, let's reenact the scene where I turned into the Joker. I'll be Batman, you be me. And he like punches him into the vat.
Let me just say this. If Joker was real and his laughing gas was a thing, and I lived in Gotham City, which we kind of do, and there is a cure for it, because we've seen in the show many times there's like a shot at the hospital you can get, and Batman has it too, where you get cured of the laughing gas thing. I would be first in line for the laughing gas vaccine. I would not want to be laughing gassed.
Oh, Do they use it as a vaccine?
No. They use it as like, yeah, they use it as a cure.
They should make a vaccine.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Brilliant. So, Jack Ryder also gets laughing gas. He gets knocked into the acid.
It's sad.
Batman shows up to try to apprehend the Joker, but the Joker, like, keeps knocking Jack back into the acid.
Mm-hmm. Jack's trying to save himself.
Yeah. Eventually he, like, does get out, but he's totally transformed.
No, well, what happens is there's a big fight between Joker, his goons, and Harley Quinn, and Batman and Robin. Robin gets thrown around by the Joker and lands on a switch that it sucks all the acid into the river or into the ocean. And that's how Jack Ryder gets out of...
That can't be good.
Right, yeah. That's how he gets out of the factory as it's exploding. Joker and Harley get away because Batman... Joker's like, oh, you're going to chase me when you could be, saving Jack Ryder. So Batman and Robin go look for Jack Ryder. They don't find him. They just see his clothes sort of melted away in the floating in the ocean. We get some more they put a little bit of a timestamp on this episode where they say that Joker's origin was 7 years prior, which I don't know how that lines up with the continuity, with all the time jumping we've seen in the show up to this point. Because I'm pretty sure, I really do feel like there was an episode where it said 10 years later.
They jump around.
Yeah, they do jump around, yeah.
What can you do?
Right. And you get, and Ryder does hint at, some Joker origin stuff that he was a gangster in this. I mean, they basically pull the plot from the Batman Burton movie.
Right.
To give a version of his origin.
Right. So Ryder comes, creeping out of the sewers, and he has on, scraps of clothing, and he starts to realize that he has sort of, these superpowers as people... get when they're transformed in
instead
this show.
Of just dying.
He's extremely agile and strong, and he can leap on top of lampposts, and
his skin is dyed yellow.
It's not as dramatically yellow in this as it was in the original.
Right.
He just looks a little jaundiced or something, but he's clearly something's going on. He's okay, let me stop and think about this logically. And he can't. So you get the idea that his brain has been transformed.
He talks about having schizophrenia now.
Right.
So he goes on a little crime spree of sorts. He goes to some crazy department store in Gotham.
A vintage store.
Right, yeah.
Ditko's vintage store.
Oh, there you go. Reference to...
vintage clothing.
Good old Steve.
Yeah. And the clerk is very blasé and helps him.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is where he goes behind
all the customers, though.
Changing screen. He gets his striped underpants and his wig cloak or whatever to complete his look. And off he goes. And he uses Jack Ryder's credit card to pay for it. Somehow he's managed to hold on to the credit card.
Right. That did not dissolve in the acid.
Yeah, for some reason. Meanwhile, Joker has returned to his hideout with Harley. And
we're made aware of his enormous ego, as he is often the crux, one of his major weaknesses. And he's extremely mad that
someone
is stealing his image. That's his biggest issue.
Right. So Harley, meanwhile, is she's back there and she's inside of a giant pie that she's baked to celebrate their 7 year anniversary. And she sings him a little song and stuff.
It's they send the trivia, Marilyn Monroe singing to JFK.
Right. And he's not interested at all. He's just stewing over how angry he is about Batman.
I mean, you only see her hat, but I know she's not nude under all that cream she's wearing, but the scene is extremely sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to him, oh, don't you want some pie from me?
Uh-huh. And don't you want to taste my pie, she says.
Right, yeah. And this episode it pushes some sexual boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of sexual harassment going on this episode, too, as we'll discuss.
Yes.
But, it's worth mentioning how in season 3, again, they're just sort of, the show has gotten a lot more risque. Overall.
Right.
And they really play up Harley's vixen status too.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Jack Ryder makes his way over to
talk about how Joker is not interested in Harley and kicks her out of his hideout.
Right.
Yeah, he he's no interest in having sex with her.
Right.
Celebrating anything.
Right. She is wearing her Harley Quinn outfit, we find out when she gets out there. The hyenas lick the pie stuff off her. So meanwhile, Jack Ryder is like in the gang hangout where like all the criminals hang out
by
like,
the docks
and whatever. And he's looking for the Joker. You know, he wants to like get back at him, I guess.
So he's like vows to fight criminals. At some point, it's mentioned.
Oh, okay.
That he wants to do crime fighting. He's not an evil Joker villain. He's been radically transformed his brain, but it's to bring like justice to Gotham. It's an insane character.
Who would know?
Yeah, he is a good guy.
Right.
And in the comics too, he's like an ally of Batman.
Okay. Yeah, they don't make that clear really in this episode, I would say.
It's mentioned. Like you have to listen for it.
But like his behavior suggests otherwise. You know.
Yeah, he's wild and wacky.
So he's in there looking for the Joker. He just finds his, like, the Joker's goons, and they call him a creep for, like, coming in there and trying to get information out of them.
Wearing a thong underwear and everything.
It's not a thong.
It's not?
It's just underwear.
I get it. It's small underwear, though.
But his butt's not out.
Okay, I understand. You're right, not a thong.
So they call him a creep, and he like kind of likes that, and he twists it, and he's like, how about creeper? Which turns out to be really accurate, because he is sexually harassing Harley Quinn like at every given chance throughout this episode.
Right.
But anyway, that's how he gets his name.
Right. So he starts fighting these goons. He's really good at fighting. Harley is moping around, and she sees the creeper in this fight in the club, and she's interested. And so when the creeper gets a look at Harley, he falls instantly in love with her. Is this like they almost like imply that, oh, this is a side effect of his Joker toxins, that maybe he would be instantly attracted to a woman like this? I don't know. I'm just surmising that.
Yeah.
Because it's and I'm basing it off again. We've referenced this so much, but the Arkham video games, where one of the plots in the third one is that various people in Gotham have been poisoned, like Jack Ryder in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they all like get a Joker persona, and they're all kind of, I wouldn't say they're like in love with Harley Quinn, but Harley's attracted to them in the video game anyway. She wants to work with them. She's excited that there's like, oh, four new Jokers that she can be in love with.
Okay.
And they're sort of like indifferent to her, but they're not like trying to kill her immediately either. So.
Okay. Batman and Robin show up, of course, and they fight the henchmen. Batman drops a pool table on one of them. But like he manages to take them down, and then the creeper has meanwhile cornered Harley in like these stacks of wooden crates at the docks, and he's really like coming onto her hard, and she's not interested.
No.
Clearly not interested.
Yeah.
And so she drops like a huge heavy crate right on top of him. She like,
yeah, and he's unharmed. He's got some kind of invincibility or super strength.
It's a very like Looney Tunes moment. Harley runs away, but Batman and Robin show up, and Batman's like, oh, we have to get him out of there. That's like horrible. They open the crate, and it's like a big stone statue.
Yeah.
And his face just like pops up in the middle of the statue. Very like cartoony.
Yeah.
You know,
I thought for sure the twist was going to be that Harley does fall for him because Joker rejected her so coldly.
I thought so too.
In these two episodes, there's a lot of direct physical abuse from Joker to Harley. To laugh at it, but it is,
it's really dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He slaps her around and kicks her and punches her a lot in these two episodes.
Right. So Harley goes running back to the Joker because she wants protection from the creeper, basically. And she's like, he's after me. And like he like bursts into the room. And she explains to the Joker, like, he's trying to, like, kiss me or date me or something. She's like, and I didn't even encourage him. And, like, I don't know. Something about that scene is, like, very fucked up. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, because she's, like, wants to be cleared. Like, because she doesn't want to get blamed for attracting another man.
Right.
It's
clear that she has, like, a very toxic relationship with the Joker that she would have to explain herself that way.
You know, she does bash him on the head with one of her mallets.
Uh-huh.
And there is like the Joker like has some chemicals he's been mixing, and they're explosive, and he throws them at the creeper and it explodes him. But he's fine.
Of course.
And that Batman and Robin show up there too. And they start chasing Joker and Harley around their hideout. And there's a bunch of like hijinks with like, you know, the Joker's got a bunch of insane, wacky props in his hideout that Batman, Robin unleashes, like, this huge glass cabinet of enormous, I don't know, what are they, gumballs or something? and they come crashing down. And then Joker also uses his, like, Batman lands on Joker's car, and Joker has, like, a switch in it that sends Batman flying.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, like, comic hijinks and wacky mischief in this episode, and the action is of that variety, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's silly.
Anyway, there's, like, a big chase with the cars and hijinks with, like, the Joker's car, and anyway, they end up in, like, a garbage heap.
Yeah, and Creeper catches the Joker and is gonna kill him, or?
I don't know.
Doesn't he just toss him to Batman?
Yeah.
Yeah, he wants him arrested.
Right. He does seem unhinged enough that he might kill somebody, but
right.
He doesn't.
Yeah. So, you know, Joker, at this point, it's like one of those weird turnarounds we've seen a few times with him where he's like begging to be arrested by Batman to be saved.
Right.
And it's at this point that Batman injects the Creeper with some kind of, I don't know, antidote or sedative or something. Mm-hmm. Like, he knocks him out.
Right.
And then we have like a really crazy twist.
It's like later or the next day or something.
Yeah,
Jack Ryder is transformed back into himself. He's no longer the Creeper.
Right. He doesn't have yellow skin.
He's in his apartment. His shirt is off and Batman has like a patch. It's like a huge nicotine patch looking right. sort of thing. And he says, like, this has like a steady stream of the antidote that's like being pumped into your blood.
You're going to need it for the rest of your life, maybe?
As long as you keep that on, like, you'll be a normal person and you can, like, redeem your career because nobody else in the public knew, like, your identity as the Creeper was Jack Ryder. So no one's any the wiser. As long as you keep the patch on, you can, like, salvage your career and just live your normal life. And he's like, okay. And then Batman leaves. And then he starts, like, peeling the patch off little by little and laughing maniacally. And you're like, what?
I thought it would have been a better twist if it just came off a little by accident and he started laughing and it fades versus him making the choice to be the Creeper.
I mean, I guess they're making the point that, like, that experience with the acid made him almost as crazy as the Joker, where it's just like he is maniacal no matter what you do. But like the other interpretation is that Batman's antidote isn't that great of an antidote because he's clearly still crazy enough to do that.
I mean, another interpretation I had was, I mean, they don't say it at all, but maybe he enjoys, it's like the Jim Carrey's The Mask, where even though he knows he's crazy as the mask, it's like he gets superpowers and can do amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's the appeal to Jack Ryder. And again, he's supposed to be a good guy, which, as you said, is not made abundantly clear in this episode.
I don't feel it's made clear at all. He spends most of the time harassing Harley Quinn, very aggressively.
Yeah, that's...
He's a very uncomfortable character.
That's more...
And I didn't enjoy the episode because of that.
That's more what happens in him declaring a war on crime, which is more of what his character's about, supposedly. All right, whatever.
That's too bad. That could have been, like, a cool interpretation of it for, like, Batman to have this unlikely, like, friend or...
Well, again, they wanted to introduce him in season one and have him, like, a bunch of Creeper storylines throughout the show, and they just never got around to him.
Yeah.
So...
All right.
Oh, well. the next episode, Mad Love, the final episode of Batman, the animated series. We've made it to the end of another animated series yet again. It's based off a Bruce Timm, Paul Dini comic they did, where they did the origin of Harley in a comic first before they did the cartoon version. That comic is like a beloved comic. It won awards, won an Eisner Award.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that, like, I learned this from Comic Book Kayfabe, the amazing YouTube channel featuring Ed Piskor, among others, where they go through different like classic comics and comment on them. They're comic creators themselves. I've seen episodes where they do Bruce Timm comics and Paul Dini comics, those Batman comics from the 90s, you think that like in a way you think like, oh, they're like going to be cheap and crappy. It's just like some weird bonus stuff from the cartoon, you know?
Yeah.
They're awesome. They're really good. The Bruce Timm, Paul Dini comics, they put a lot of love into them. And they're very like extremely like top of the line comic book stories and beautiful art. So if you love Batman, the animated series, you will not be let down like by picking up like the various, you know, the republications or, you know, even the original versions. I'm sure you can get them. It's supposed to be really good. I mean, for instance, I've never read they had a spinoff of X-Men, the cartoon in comic book form in the 90s. And I remember picking them up on the shelf as a kid and saying, these must suck. I like put them back. I just wanted the regular mainstream X-Men comics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're good or bad. I have no idea, to be honest. They did make a lot of them, so you know, someone let us know if you've read like the X-Men 90s comics based on the cartoon, if they're good, if they're worth reading. I might actually want to check that out. But I know for a fact that the Batman animated series comics are excellent. Mm. So anyway, and they also did Superman comics too, which are supposed to be quite good too. So Sonia, how does the final episode of Batman begin?
So this is going to also be like a Joker and Harley Quinn episode.
Right.
I will say the Harley Quinn origin that we saw, I think it was in
The other Harley Quinn show.
Yeah. Like her origin there is that she falls into the vat of acid also.
I believe right? so, yeah.
And it makes her kind of nuts. But like that's kind of what they did with the Creeper.
Yeah.
So I guess they didn't want to do it like again.
I don't know. Something. I haven't read the comic, the Paul Dini, Bruce Timm comic. I don't know if she falls into the acid in there or they're just she just gets manipulated by the Joker.
Interesting.
I mean, I would say too that in the Harley Quinn TV show where she falls into the acid, they kind of make it clear as the show goes on that the acid wasn't even the tipping point.
It wasn't the catalyst.
No.
It was going to be crazy no matter
what.
Yeah,
she had like a lot of issues in her childhood and things that drove her to becoming who she was.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, anyway.
Yes.
So this episode opens up on Commissioner Gordon. He's going to get his dental checkup because it's required by the police union or something like that. He doesn't want to do it. He's there. He's talking to the dentist about it. And the dentist turns around and it turns out it's the Joker. And Harley Quinn is in the doorway.
The worst dentist imaginable.
I know. What a nightmare. I don't even like mind going to the right. dentist, but that.
Yeah, we both see a very sweet dentist. It's still obviously not fun.
Harley's standing in the doorway. She has like a some kind of gun that shoots like ropes that tied Gordon up to the dentist chair so he can't get out. She stuffs some cotton in or something in his mouth so he can't talk or scream or anything. And the Joker's about to like drill into his face.
Yeah.
And Batman comes crashing in through the window, luckily, and saves the day. I mean,
and he humiliates the Joker too. He attacks the Joker's ego. He's like, listen, your clues are becoming too obvious. You're losing a step. I figured this out in 2 seconds.
The Joker apparently had left him like a pair of those chattering teeth, like that wind-up toy, with like a little note on it. So Batman knew exactly when and where to go, basically.
Right.
And Harley's like, hey, that was my idea. But it didn't. It left Joker in like a very foul mood to hear that like his plans were no longer sophisticated to Batman.
Right, yeah. They do get out of the situation. Joker sprays some gas, which I was shocked how unprepared Batman is for a gas attack from the Joker.
Yeah.
It does work, and he gets out of the room and like leaves a grenade on his way, but Batman saves himself, Robin, Gordon, they all jump out the window or something.
Right.
And, you know, so Joker is upset, though, as you said, that this whole scheme was a big like dud.
Right. So he's stewing on that back at his hideout. And very in keeping with the last episode that we saw, Harley is there. She's in like a nightgown, that like looks, short, like negligee sort of thing.
It's in the colors of her costume.
Right. But she's trying to get Joker to pay attention to her.
To have sex.
Yeah.
Again, they're really pushing the sexual stuff in these episodes.
And he is just like, he just like slaps her away, like literally.
Yeah.
Like,
violently.
He's really mean to her. He's like physically abusive to her. He's not interested. He's too obsessed with catching Batman to pay attention to her.
And she's like, why don't you just kill Batman? Shoot him in the face. And he's enraged by the suggestion. He's like, it's got to be like the greatest killing of all time.
He's like, I have to use my comic genius to accomplish this task. Why don't you understand?
Yeah.
And he literally throws her out the door in her negligee.
Right.
And she's like walking down like some alley with her two hyenas lamenting like, oh, how did I get here? What even happened? And that like launches us into the flashback of when she was right. Dr. Harleen Quinzel.
It's worth noting too that Joker has like one scheme where he wants to kill Batman by piranhas, but he can never get his laughing gas to make the piranhas smile, which is important to him.
Right.
And so they just like file that away for later. So she kicks out Harley into the alley, and then she sort of starts like mumbling her origin story to her hyenas and telling like how she became who she is.
Right. So basically, she was a young psychiatric doctor interning at Arkham Asylum.
Harleen Quinzel.
And she always felt like there was like something about people with these extreme personalities that was extremely interesting to her.
Right. Again, this is all stuff that they pull for the Batman video games too, and those games were like sort of co-written or stories based on Paul Dini stuff, so he had a hand in them. And so a lot of this stuff you see here would be used years later in Batman Arkham Asylum specifically.
Mm. As she's like looking around at the inmates, patients, I mean,
right.
whatever, for the first time, she meets the Joker through like that clear plexiglass or whatever. And he's just kind of like, I don't know, he's not being like so overt, but he like makes it clear that he likes her, and she starts blushing. And it's clear that like she just like falls in love with him pretty much right away.
You know, I remember when I first heard of the Harley backstory, whenever it was, just reading about it or some comic book or whatever, like I was like, oh, that's lame. She's a doctor. You know, like it just seems so unbelievable and silly.
Uh-huh.
But the more, I mean, the Harley Quinn show really turned me around on it, of the backstory like making sense. And this came way before the Harley Quinn show. So now seeing this episode for the first time, I really do think it was brilliant by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm coming up with this back. It's just, it's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
Like a young woman who is a PhD psychologist or psychiatrist just somehow gets seduced by this lunatic.
Right.
And I don't know, like there's something just compelling about that storyline to me. That it's
right.
Just, like,
I mean, I'm
so
sure
crazy.
Like episodes like this planted the seed for the Harley Quinn show that would come later,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
Because it does beg the question of like, well, was she always kind of insane and that's why she went into psychiatry? Or was it that she like spent so much time in psychiatry thinking about all these things that she became like, I don't know.
Demented.
Like,
you know, in the
that doesn't totally make sense, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, what, like, where was the actual root cause?
Well, they talk about in the Harley Quinn show, in their interpretation anyway, it's like she is a super type A personality.
Right.
She's super beautiful. She's incredibly talented at gymnastics. She's a genius.
Yeah. No, I mean, they answer all the questions right. in that show, but I'm saying this like planted the seed for someone to like go deeper.
Yeah, of course. That's why it's a great premise. Yeah. There's a lot to like really flesh out there. And it's just really smart. So it's interesting how like your opinion on something like that can just evolve over time. Of like, again, it seemed silly to me when I first learned about Harley's origin.
Hmm.
Seemed like dumb and unbelievable, but. Mm-hmm.
But also that Harley Quinn show is a great example. I mean, eventually you do see Batman and the Joker in that show, but like that show, so many episodes pass where it's only her and Ivy as like,
right.
and like a few other side characters. But, like, they did manage to make a very entertaining show about a side character and gave, like, all the characters involved, like, depth and motivation and stuff, you know? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Kraven the Hunter doesn't have to be a bad movie, but it will be.
Right. It's more of a Sony thing. Yeah, of course. Kraven the Hunter could, like, theoretically, someone could make a great Kraven the Hunter movie.
Yeah.
They're but not they going won't. To, no. But
that's a sidetrack.
That's a story for another day.
Go on.
So we just see like how she's getting seduced by the Joker over time. She puts in paperwork to interview the Joker, and she says it takes months before she could even sit down with him. And, you know, as she does, like Joker gives her a bunch of, stories about his childhood. Like he promises to tell her secrets, and the secrets he tells her about, like he had a drunken father who beat him all the time and he can never do anything right. And like one time he got revenge on his dad by pulling some prank on him, like pulled his pants, ripped his pants open or something. And he got thanked for it by his nose being broken. And Harley is really moved. Like first she's like laughing really hard at the story when he's telling her about the prank, but then she's moved to tears when he explains that like, oh, my dad then beat me up further.
Right. I mean, he delivers it like a joke, but then like the punchline is really tragic, you know, and it just like stops her in her tracks and there's something she likes about it.
You know, you see her, like, go down the road here and just being, like, sort of manipulated, but also just, like, for whatever reason, falling in love with this guy. So, you know, over time, like, she becomes so sympathetic to the Joker. Oh, like, he escapes from prison at one point, and then when he's returned by Batman, all his limbs are broken, and he's sort of recuperating in his cell, and she feels so horrible for him. This is what causes her to snap. Like, she thinks, the summary of her whole narration in the past is, in her mind, she blames Batman for her and the Joker not having a happy life. And there is some funny gags of like her reminiscing about the Joker actually really being a sweet guy. And he just like people just not getting his antics mm-hmm. when they're showing him machine gunning like groups of people like right. happily. And she thinks that's all innocent fun. And so anyway, when Joker is brought back another time by Batman, all like broken and bloody. Oh, and there's a lot of blood in this episode. And the last one too, the characters are bleeding from their faces, is worth noting. That's when she like finally like loses it and like breaks into some kind of like
it's like a costume shop or something.
Costume magic shop, and steals a Harlequin outfit, some bunch of like props, and she robs the place too. You know, the guy's expecting payment and she just runs away. So she's a full criminal now. She's in her Harlequin outfit. She sneaks into Arkham and busts the Joker out, and they're a pair together, and they're like, they escape in a car and they're laughing as they drive down the road.
Right. And that's like the end of her flashback sequence, essentially. So back like in the present day where Commissioner Gordon went to the dentist, Harley's like lamenting to her hyenas about how Batman is really like the cause of all her problems. And if she could just get rid of Batman, then Joker would have time to pay attention to her and they could be a happy couple again.
Right. Again, season three is like, it's weird because it's still in continuity with what we saw in the first two seasons. But the thing that are out of continuity are the emotional journeys we see characters go on. Mm. Because we clearly saw Harley attempt to reform herself multiple times, also like stand up for herself and like break free of Joker's romantic grip he has on her, and she falls in with Poison Ivy as like a friend. So in the, again, in this season, it's like that's kind of a lot of that emotional growth is out the window, because this whole turn that happens next where she sends a video to Gordon Batman where she takes off her Harlequin outfit and she looks like a regular woman again. She's like, listen, I'm ready to like fully be good for real this time. We've sort of seen it before and it was more like convincing and logical then, and now it's just part of a scheme to capture Batman.
Right, which you know because she like explains it basically. But she lures Batman down to the dock. She says, okay, look, I have all this evidence of like Joker's next scheme to like kill everyone in the city.
It's not a joke anymore, you know.
And then like she has like a a Joker robot rigged up to come like shooting at Batman.
Yeah.
And insane. Like while he's distracted, she tranquilizes Batman.
Yeah.
And
he wakes up chained up above a like a huge aquarium of piranhas.
Right, which is the idea that Joker had been saying like, oh, it's never gonna work because the piranhas can't smile. And so Harley explains to Batman, like, I have you hanging upside down so that when you go into the water, even though the piranhas are frowning, they'll look like they're smiling to you. So I made it work.
Yeah. Now, I have a question for you. In my mind, I'm like, Batman's a master escape artist. He's been trained by Zatanna's dad. Like, he should be able to escape being tied up in chains, suspended over water easily, with or without his bat belt, utility belt. Do you think he could have escaped this whole time, but he is so smart that he's waiting for everything that we see unfold where he gets this like master psychological edge over Joker and Harley Quinn? Or do you think that he was genuinely in trouble and just everything played out just the way it needed to?
I had the same thought as you. I was like, he could do Houdini tricks. I'm sure he could get out of there, but he's going to like wait until that's the last resort option.
Yeah.
Because he wants...
He does explain later, though, to the Joker, like, you know, Harley had me killed, but you screwed it up. So I don't know if he's, again, he could just be lying to the Joker there.
Yeah.
Because he's really, like, deflating his ego.
That's true. I mean, he doesn't have his utility belt on, but I guess in, like, his training, he didn't either.
No. And it always, I mean, the thing is, it's, like, it's always story dependent. Like, Batman always has, like, some clips in his pants or something, you know.
Right, like, up his sleeve, he has, like, a pin or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the same thing as you, though. When I saw him hanging there, I was like, he can get out of that. That's no problem for him.
Yeah.
But instead, he plays some, like, mind games with Harley Quinn.
And it's a great scene. This is a really good episode.
Yeah.
I would say it's the last episode. It is excellent. And it's great, like, subject matter to save for the final one, you know, like, getting Harley's backstory.
Right.
Yeah, so he starts, like, Harley's explaining, like, oh, I'm going to kill you, and Joker's going to be in love with me and see that, like, how great I am. And Batman starts laughing, kind of like the Joker, maniacally, in a strange way. And Harley's deeply unsettled by Batman laughing. She says, I've never heard you laugh before. What is so funny? You have to tell me. And he starts explaining, like, the Joker's not going to be pleased.
He's like such an egomaniac that like he's not going to let anyone kill me except for himself.
Right. And also you'll have no proof that you killed me because the piranhas will devour me. All that will be left is bone.
Right.
And so
that's not proof that you actually were the one that killed me. And like, it works on her. She calls up Joker and he like comes down there right away. But he's not like happy with Harley's work. He's actually furious at her and says like, because she like explains the whole plan to him about like, oh, he's upside down. So the piranhas look right. like they're smiling. And he's like, you're such an idiot. Like, you just had to explain the joke to me. And that makes it not funny by definition. So like, yeah. you really screwed up. He turns it around on
and
her.
And he's just like hitting her again. But then Batman is like still sort of like messing with them psychologically, explains to Harley, like, the Joker doesn't think you're special. You're just an idiot. Another idiot. Like, he saw you instantly as hired help. And he starts telling all the little stories that Joker's told people throughout the years that are all lies about his life. Mm-hmm. It's like, which one did you fall for? Story A or story B? Story mm-hmm. C or story D? And she, like, realizes that Joker has been lying and manipulating to her this whole time. And that's another thing that's, like, messing her up. And Joker, like, fights Harley and, like, kicks her out a window, presumably to her death. She doesn't die, but it's a violent fall.
It looks like she should. Yeah. She lands in like a like a dumpster or something.
But like a dumpster filled with wood, like nothing soft.
Like breaks her fall, I guess. But yeah.
It's like a two-story drop at least. Maybe.
More.
Yeah.
It's like a several-story drop.
Yeah.
I don't know. They show like her hand twitch a little. Like
she survives like Omar in The Wire from season 5.
Yeah.
When he jumps off like a 5-story balcony. So I mean that's messed up. So that, like right away, right there, that's insane. That's messed up thing number one that happens. Another bigger messed up thing will happen soon. But then Joker's like he pulls Batman away from the piranha cage and sort of puts him on the table. He's like, yeah. He's like, Batman, all right, I'm gonna leave you. You know, like we'll.
He's like, sorry, we'll do this again another time.
Yeah.
You know, apologies for Harley and her harebrained scheme. And
that's where Batman like goes after Joker's ego more.
Mm-hmm.
He's like explains to him like, oh, you know, Harley had me.
Right.
And, you know, joke's on you, I guess.
Right. Joker starts like making a run for it. Batman like quickly leaps over.
But doesn't he make another like something happens, though? I think the Joker. Doesn't he like decide to like kill Batman after all?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. He does actually just take out a gun and he's like, all right, I guess this is how it's going to end.
Right? Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's going to shoot him.
I forgot about that. Yeah. And then like at the second that he pulls the trigger, Batman like lunges at him or kicks him or something. So he ends up shooting the piranha tank. All the fish flow out. Batman gets his utility belt, gets like a lock, what do you call it?
It's an insane scene. Yeah. He's like
so quickly
he's tied up and he's like hopping and he gets the lock out of his utility belt with his mouth.
Right.
And then that's how he frees himself.
Joker runs into the stairwell. Batman manages to follow. I don't know why Joker doesn't like take another shot at him at this point. Like
there's a lot of chaos. I think there's just a lot of chaos.
He's like fighting piranhas off himself.
Yeah.
For a minute, I guess.
Joker jumps out. Like he gets to the skyscraper. They're on the skyscraper and Joker makes an insane leap of faith where he like jumps into nothing, into a void, but ends up landing on a open air train.
Right, the top of like a subway car.
Yeah, and he's laughing as Batman's like left on the top of the skyscraper and he's flying away.
But Batman manages to like get next to Joker on the train.
This is his real Houdini act.
So when Joker turns around, like Batman's there, you know, he's like startled. Then they have a fight sequence on top of the train, which is a trope that you and I have talked about. We don't like in particular, but
this is early on in fight scenes.
It's short.
Superhero fight scenes.
I mean, whatever.
On trains.
In the end, Batman like punches the Joker so hard that he is knocked off the train into the smokestack of like some industrial building.
I mean, it's a pretty brutal fight. Like Joker's getting some good jabs in on Batman. Does he pull a knife at him at some point?
Yeah, but Batman like blocks.
Batman's very upset about seeing the knife, right? And you said he punches him off the train. Joker goes flying into the city and lands in a open smokestack. That's very high.
That seems like it should be a killing blow,
too. It's a killing blow, for sure,
but
in the last episode.
If Harley didn't die, then I guess Joker might have not died, but we'll never know.
Right. I mean, we do know. I mean, at the end, it's revealed Joker is alive.
Well, yeah.
Which is a tradition of in the comics, too, where Joker is seemingly killed by Batman, only to just, like, miraculously found to be alive later on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not totally revealed that he's alive. It's that, like,
yeah.
It's Summer Gleason or somebody, like a newscaster, is talking on TV and they're like, and the Joker seems to have disappeared, but he has a way of resurfacing at the strangest moments or something like that.
Well, we do know he's alive because we see Harley's back in Arkham. She says she's free of the Joker's...
Oh, yeah, 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 you're right.
She's free... The final twist. She's free of the Joker's romantic spell. She's going to just, you know, stop being obsessed with him. And just as she's finishing that thought, she turns her head and sees a flower that says, oh, get well soon, sign J. And that's something that was like reminiscent of the first time he gave her a flower in Arkham Asylum.
Right. So she knows that he's still around. And she like falls right back in love with him again, despite the fact that he like routinely beats her up and almost kills her.
Yes.
Dark.
Yeah. A dark ending. I mean, did Batman know that Joker isn't going to die? Did he not care? You know, there's been some discussion online where Zack Snyder talked about how, oh, people are mad at me because I made Batman a killer, but, you know, he has killed before and, you know, it could be part of his character. And he talked about how he didn't like the idea that Batman couldn't be a killer, that he wanted to challenge that idea. I don't love that interpretation personally. I like the idea that Batman doesn't kill. And I think it's like it's more of a sign of a superior intellect that he can find a way to win the day without having to resort to like murdering somebody to prove his point or to win. So, and I know there's exceptions to that too. Batman is killed in multiple different movies. You know, he's killed in comics. But still, I always point to Batman Tass as like, this is like my Batman. This is canon Batman. He doesn't kill.
Yeah.
Except I can't really.
Except at the very end.
The last scene of the last episode, he might have killed the Joker with an uppercut.
But he didn't.
He didn't, right. Yeah. Joker's fine, I guess. We'll see the Joker again in other DC cartoons. He reappears.
I said I didn't like the previous episode, Beware the Creeper, but like these two are almost companion episodes. Like, it does make sense to watch them together if you're going to do a rewatch. And like the last one is very good.
Yeah, the last one's great. I'd give it a 10 out of 10. Mm. I mean, it's probably more impactful than if you watched it, especially when, I mean, I guess you could have like got the comic in 1994 that had the origin, but I don't think many people probably did back then. So if you waited just for the cartoon to conclude itself, you finally got your Harley Quinn origin. And it's really good. It's interesting and it's weird.
Yeah.
I'd say that like Harley, Joker, and Batman are the three best characters in the animated series. Yeah. Is that fair to
totally
just like so it makes sense that they would like wind
Rounded
up
out.
With those guys to close out the series. I'm trying to think now, do I think those are the top three? We had to rank our favorite characters on Batman the Animated Series.
It's hard to say with the Joker because he's so like ever like he's the Wolverine of the Batman franchise.
That's a good way of putting it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he gets like an inordinate amount of attention compared to other characters that arguably deserve it as much as he does. Mm-hmm. I also like the Clayface iteration a lot in the Batman animated series. Poison Ivy is great.
I love Two-Face.
Two-Face is great.
I love the origin episodes of Two-Face. They're just masterpieces. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go. Hey, we finished the series. Like, let's think back a little. Like, what are our favorite episodes? For me, I think it might be the Two-Face double episode. And I bet this is all contradicted by other things we've done in other episodes. But I love...
Now with the context of the entire series under your belt.
Yeah. The animation on the Two-Face episodes is, like, amazing. But the Clayface... I might be confusing Two-Face and Clayface. I think, Two-Face and Clayface tied for me is like, because they're both two-parters, I believe, or maybe Clayface isn't two-part. Either way, Two-Face, Clayface, those are my two best episodes tied.
Okay. I guess I like almost all of like the mainstay villains. I really like a lot of the Catwoman episodes where she's like hopping around with Isis, scratching circles into glass, like really fun.
Yeah.
I would say, like, I'm not a huge fan of the Penguin episodes, usually.
Yeah, he's the weakest of the best of the most well-known villains.
I know you really like the Riddler, but I'm not a huge fan. He's okay.
I think the Riddler origin episode is great.
Yeah.
Like, truly a classic. I think what we see from the Riddler following that is diminishing returns, and he's not featured that much, and he's not... It's, like, just not as, like, consistently good.
I don't like the Mad Hatter episodes too much.
Yeah, he's not my favorite.
And there's also like a lot
except with the exception of Perchance to Dream. Yeah, which might be really the best episode.
That
of the
is
entire.
An awesome episode.
That's the best singular episode, because Two-Face and Clayface are definitely two-parters.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not huge on like a lot of the one-off villains.
Yeah.
I know like some of those episodes are good anyway,
There's too many Island of Dr. Moreau episodes.
Yeah, exactly. Where there's like one crazy scientist who just like took it too far or something.
Crazy genetically modified animals, too many.
Yeah.
Especially in season three. Another great character in the series is Robin.
Yeah.
Robin one.
Nightwing.
Nightwing. Well, not Nightwing, I was like less impressed
before he becomes Nightwing.
Yeah, Dick Grayson's Robin is a great character. Yeah, his origin episode is fantastic.
I love all like the scenes where you just see him like at college.
Yeah.
Hanging out with his buds.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Alfred's a great character.
Alfred is another one where it's like you see all the iterations of him in the Batman movies and you're always like, this is a weird take on Alfred. Like the real Alfred is this Alfred from Batman Past.
I keep saying that like, oh, this is the best episode. Then I remember like Night of the Ninja.
Oh, yeah.
The two ninja episodes.
Those are amazing.
Those are also like tied for me as maybe the best.
Yeah.
Those are so good. It's not the best episode, but the Zatanna episode.
Oh, Zatanna is also a great episode.
Quite good.
Character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the whole episodes are really good.
His backstory, right. Just building the backstory that Bruce Wayne is an expert at magic. Like really, always, I loved that as a kid.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he had Mask of the Phantasm, the standalone movie, which we did way back when. You'll have to look in our episode feed to find that. That in itself was great. We didn't obviously cover all the Batman animated series movies. I haven't seen them.
I haven't either.
There's like a Mr. Freeze one and a Joker one, I believe. So maybe we'll watch those one day, too, and talk about them to complete it out.
Okay.
I mean, it's a great show. I mean,
the animation does fall off in the third season.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised by the writing overall in the third season. Like every season, there were like a few duds. But overall, season three, like the plots and stuff still held up. The scripts were still as good.
Yeah, they definitely got weirder and bolder.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, again, as we mentioned in this episode, they knock some great continuity out, unfortunately. Like they had, and season two was so good because of the way it put cappers on a lot of the stories with these villains. And they just kind of said, forget that.
You know,
the story goes on.
Right. But very true to the comics, because that also happens in the comics.
Yeah. So what happens to Batman from here? I mean, like, so there's the Justice League cartoons. There's like regular Justice League, and I think Justice League Unlimited. Mm-hmm. There's Batman Beyond, which is still in this continuity, which I'd never seen an episode of, which people are mad at me about because it is supposedly really, really good.
Okay.
Did you ever see Batman Beyond?
No.
You know what it's about, right? It's like Batman in the future. He's an old man, and he's got a new young Batman that fights Joker in the future or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll check it out one day. Not necessarily do the whole series, but just to, like watch a few
just
select
see how
episodes.
It is.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have all the DC animated movies, and which some are good and some are not so good. I've seen a lot of them. I don't know. Like, they're mixed quality. To me, it's like the true sequel. Well, not sequel. It's not, okay, not sequel. The true spiritual successor to Batman the Animated Series are the Batman Arkham video games.
Mm-hmm.
They're so good. They've got the original voice cast for the most part. And, you know, at least we're like the two main stars, Mark Hamill and, oh man, I can't believe his name is escaping me in the final episode. Kevin Conroy. I'm sorry. They got Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill. And again, like Paul Dini has his handprints all over those video games. The video games are awesome. And you like, it's like, I was a young adult when they came out, and it's like, now as a young adult, I get to control the Batman from the cartoon and, you know, live in the world. Like, that was amazing to me. So, in the end, I'm going to give Batman the Animated Series a score of 10 out of 10.
5 stars.
5 stars from you, 10 out of 10 from me. I don't know how that math ends up being, but pretty good, I guess. And it was a fun ride, I must say.
This has been a very fun series to watch every week and talk about.
And it's going to be weird transitioning back to X-Men just because it is a different vibe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how, you know, how those vibes will carry on 25 years later, essentially.
Yeah.
We'll find out together. Next week, who knows what we'll talk about before X-Men.
Oh, right.
Maybe we'll take some time off, a well-deserved time off. I don't know, but maybe we'll come back with a bonus episode. You'll never know. You have to just stay tuned and find out. That's really on you guys, not on us.
We too will find out.
Yeah. So, Sonia?
Good night.
Good night.